So the title of my talk, what we're talking about this morning, is Gotta Serve Somebody. I'll tell you in a minute where I got that title. We've been walking our way through the book of Joshua, haven't we? And this falls in line with the book of Joshua, as you'll see today. But Gotta Serve Somebody, it doesn't really come from the book of Joshua. It's Dylan. Yeah, exactly. Bob Dylan. Everybody, you know, everybody who knows me knows that I'm a big music fan, and I'm a pretty big Dylan fan. Now, look, it's perhaps less well known by everyone that in the late 70s, yeah, Bob Dylan, he released a series of Christian albums. This is no joke, like a series of Christian albums. And the first one was not working because I don't have it on. The first one was called Slow Train Coming. Has anyone ever heard Slow Train Coming, the album? Oh, yeah, it's a classic. I mean, this is a winner of an album. It wasn't appreciated at the time, but goodness, it's a good album. A really strong Christian message, a nice Christian album. Not like Hillsong, not like, you know, hey, do you know what sounds good for starting a song? Ethereal synthesizer pad and one single guitar line over the top. Let's just start all the songs that way. Don't shoot me, Hillsong fan club. I'm just the messenger, all right? No, no, no. This one was made by actual musicians. So it's so it's good. It's bluesy. It's got a little bit of old school gospel flavor. I'm sorry, I just had to go there. I couldn't help it. It's got a bit of old school gospel flavor. Look, you don't have to take my word for it. We're going to listen to one of the tracks on it. Now, this track is called Gotta Serve Somebody. Now, we're not going to listen to the whole thing because, for goodness sakes, it's a Dylan song. It goes for like 10 minutes. But we'll listen to a few of the verses just to get the feel of it. So let's have a listen to that right now. All right, we can, I think, stop it there because it goes on and on and on and on. But I think Dylan's hit on something here, and he's absolutely right. Everybody's got to serve somebody. Now, in the song, he says it's either the devil or it's the Lord. I don't know if it's quite that cut and dry, to be honest. I tend to think it's actually more, it usually works out to be, you either choose to serve the Lord or you choose to serve yourself. And that's kind of what I want to talk about this morning. Because that's going to bring us right into the book of Joshua, which we've been studying over the past few weeks. Today we're going to look at a very, very well-known verse in Joshua from Joshua chapter 24. So if you want to, I don't know, if you have those Bibles with you, you have your phones or your other devices, you might want to get yourself prepped for Joshua 24. But I'll get us into it a little bit here. It's a very famous verse in this passage, the choose this day whom you will serve verse. And it is whom, by the way, because it's the object of the verb, see, and that's the objective case of whom. So it is whom. But choose this day whom you will serve. How many of us know that verse? Oh, yeah, everybody. We all know it because it's a well-known verse. And it's often appearing on, like, Christian memes and posters and things that you see on Facebook, like these ones, yeah? You can tell they're Christian because that one has a mountaintop scene with a bunch of clouds on it. It would be a little bit better if there was a person there with their arms like this, right? That would be far more Christian. But the one on the side, the right side, also has an idyllic country scene with the sunshine poking through the clouds, yeah? So that one's definitely Christian. definitely. But all these means, while they're lovely, and while we all know this verse, a lot of times we actually ignore the rest of the passage. The rest of this passage, it's a little fuzzy when we get into it, and it's not so nice and cheerful, actually. So let's have a look at that, because the rest of this passage is often ignored. Now, a bit of background on this passage. This is the end, basically the end of the book of Joshua. Joshua has come to the end of his life, and the promised land, most of it, has been conquered. And the Israelites are now living in at least parts of or most of the land. And now Joshua is giving his farewell speech. And it's a little bit like, full credit to the opposition for pushing us to the final siren. But yeah, full credit to the boys for giving 110% and backing themselves in all the way. No, it's not like that. It's actually, it's quite a bit more formal than that. And it's a bit of a covenant structure or a call and response formula. So what's happening here is that Joshua is asking the people who they want to serve, don't want to miss that, grammar Nazis, whom they want to serve. Is it going to be the Lord or is it going to be the gods around? And it's a call and response. The people respond, Joshua then responds to them. And what's happening here is that the covenant of Yahweh is actually being renewed. This is the process of renewing the covenant with the people. And that's important for us to understand as we read it. So with that in mind, look, let's read it. So chapter 24, I'm going to start in verse 14. And we'll start with 14 and 15. Here's what it says. This is Joshua talking. Now, fear Yahweh and serve him with all faithfulness. Throw away the gods your ancestors worshipped beyond the Euphrates River and in Egypt, and serve Yahweh. But if serving Yahweh seems undesirable to you, then choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve, whether the gods your ancestors served beyond the Euphrates, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you are now living. But as for me and my household, we will serve Yahweh. So Joshua here is giving them a very clear choice, isn't he? They can choose to serve the Canaanite gods around them. Here's a few examples that we know of, El, Asherah, Baal. They can choose to serve those gods. And that's not easy because in the sort of the Middle Eastern concept of the gods at this time, a Middle Eastern religion, it worked like this. The gods created human beings as basically as slaves. And the human beings were there to meet the gods' physical needs so that the gods could live lives of leisure and relaxing and rest. That was the word that was often used. So the humans, the purpose of the humans, as far as the gods were concerned, was to serve them, was to meet their physical needs. And humans didn't do this for nothing, right? They did this for prosperity in return for wealth or prosperity or well-being. In other words, they did it for rewards or to at least avoid punishment, but they did it for rewards. They did it essentially, if you think about it, serving gods like this was more or less serving yourself because you're looking for something in return. You're looking to get something back, aren't you? Almost to manipulate these gods into giving you something. So the people's choice, well, they can serve gods like that. They can do that kind of service. Or they can serve Yahweh. And serving Yahweh meant you had to keep the covenant. Yeah, it's Indiana Jones. Yeah. You had to keep the covenant. Right? You had to keep the regulations of the law and the sacrificial system of the covenant. That was what serving Yahweh looked like. That was what loyalty to Yahweh actually looked like. So let's read about the choice that the people actually make. Because here it is as we go down through the rest of the verses we'll read today. I'm going to skip down a little bit, but I will start in 16. So Joshua asked them this question, whom will you serve? Then the people answered, far be it from us to forsake Yahweh to serve other gods. And skipping down a little bit, they say this, we too will serve Yahweh, because he is our God. Then Joshua said to the people, you are not able to serve Yahweh. Oh, how many of us are familiar with this particular verse? You are not able to serve Yahweh. He is a holy God. He is a jealous God. He will not forgive your rebellion and your sins. If you forsake Yahweh and serve foreign gods, he will turn and bring disaster on you and make an end of you after he has been good to you. It's cheerful, isn't it? Yeah, we don't often read those verses, probably because they're not quite as inspirational on a meme as the first ones. doesn't quite have the same ring. You're probably not going to see that on your Facebook or Instagram feed anytime soon. But yeah, look, let's be honest. This gives us a very, very hard picture, a very hard picture of what service to Yahweh actually looks like, and a hard picture of Yahweh himself and his response to poor service. Now, when I get poor service, I usually just write a Google review, but this kind of poor service, look at what Joshua says about it. I mean, basically he says, he won't forgive you for your sins. He'll destroy you for failing your commitment to the covenant. Yeah, it's not quite as inspirational, is it? And that's the Old Testament picture a lot of times that we get of serving Yahweh, of serving God. And it's a picture that these days people generally don't really like, right? They're not keen on serving a God like that. You know, in 2008, 2009, there was a group of atheists, yeah, in London. And they started an advertising campaign. And the advertising, I don't know, you may have heard of this. The advertising campaign was on the side of like these London buses, the double-decker buses. This is what it said, yeah? This was their campaign. There's probably no God. Now stop worrying and enjoy your life. Now, what I love about this, and you might, you know, there's always people who look at that. There were people who looked at that, got really angry at the atheists. Yeah, I can't say that. Well, you know what? Honestly, it's very telling, isn't it? Because first of all, it shows us what people think God is like. Yeah? Why would you be able to stop worrying? Well, because their image of God, their understanding of God is of this angry, bitter, stern, severe God. And you can see from this the way they think of it. The other part is, you know, if there's no God, then what can you do? You can start to just enjoy your life, have fun. Get out there, live a little bit, dance, drink, enjoy. And it's not surprising that kind of God people don't want to serve. Yeah? We don't want an angry God telling us what to do all the time. We don't want to be slaves to a tyrant. And so instead, what ends up happening is they end up serving other gods, like, you know, consumerism or money. It's still a good song. Let's be honest. You can't not like them. They, you know, but serving money, right? Always the constant quest for more and more and more. Or maybe self-improvement, right? Getting to the top somehow, being successful. Or maybe at worst, like the worst form of this is maybe hedonism. Yeah, serving pleasures, looking at going after happiness, going after good feelings, making yourself feel good, having fun. Serving those types of gods. And you know, in a way, it's not all that different from the book of Joshua and serving the Canaanite gods, is it? It's still basically serving yourself. Those kinds of acts of service are really just looking out for number one, looking out for me, what I want, what I need, things that will make me happy. But it's understandable. It really is. It's understandable how people end up here. Because if your option is one of these or a very stern and severe type of God, well, then I can kind of understand how people end up in these areas. And very sadly, I think that some of us often think that we serve this kind of severe God, you know, a harsh master, iron-fisted, someone who's always looking over our shoulder. And when we have that sort of attitude, then what the kind of service that we often end up with is legalism, where we think we need to follow a bunch of rules and laws. And sadly, I'll tell you this, we often get there by reading books like Joshua, but not understanding, not grappling with, not fully appreciating their cultural context. We need to be very careful about doing that because, look, the writer of Joshua, he recognizes, first of all, it's fair to say, he recognizes that Yahweh is different from the gods of the Canaanites. He recognizes that Yahweh is different. First of all, Yahweh doesn't have any physical needs for humans to meet. That's a huge difference. Yahweh is the provider, of course. He's the one who provides the physical needs of his people. He is holy. He is righteous. But we still have to understand that the Israelite writers, like Joshua, they inhabited a very harsh world. They inhabited a very severe world, a very violent world. That was the world in which they lived. And it's understandable that some of that would leak into their understanding of God. It's understandable that they would, in some ways, see Yahweh as harsh or even dangerous. And I'll say it, I'll give you the tip. I don't always like the God that I see in Joshua. I think if we're honest, if we're really honest, we'd probably say the same thing. We don't always like the God that we see there and in the other in some of the other Old Testament books. So, that brings us to this. What does serving God look like in the New Testament? Why don't we kick ourselves over to the New Testament? Well, look, let's not kid ourselves into thinking that somehow the New Testament gives us a soft image of service. It really doesn't. When we look at Jesus' words here, anyone who loves his father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. Anyone who loves his son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And anyone who does not take up his cross and follow me is not worthy of me. Look, it's very clear even in the New Testament that service to God is a full commitment. It requires full loyalty and full commitment, and much, much is still asked of us. Much is still required of us. But again, what does that service look like? What does service to God actually look like? Now, here's where the audience participation comes in, yeah? Because that's the question. What does it actually look like? I'm going to do my teacher thing and drag over this whiteboard, hey? Now, I'm not going to make you come down to the floor for floor time, children, but that would be fun too. As long as you sit next to somebody who will help you to pay attention, not hinder you from paying attention. All right. Can you see that over there? I'll try to. It's really hard to angle it so that I can see. But anyway, I'll do my best. You'll hear. It's good. It's perfect for you. Yeah, exactly. And good for me. It works for me. Look, shout them out. What do you think service to God actually looks like? What does it look like for us to serve God? Praise. You'll be the first one on the board, Richard. Do you want me to put your initials next to it to show that it was your idea? No. Go ahead. Oh, look at Cherie's raising a hand like a good student. You can call out. Obedience. I like that. Surrender. That's nice. Well, it's not always nice, is it? But heart response. I heard commitment in there too. Reverence. Sorry, I'll come back to you. I stuffed up my M on commitment, so now I need my rubber. I don't cross out. I like to rub out. There we go. Now I'm falling behind my... I got commitment. What I had reverence. And Adam, what was yours? Acts of kindness. Well, listen to you. Friendship. Ooh. Love. Ooh. I heard friendship. Ooh. Let's get it all down. Sacrifice. Risk, bravery. My penmanship's starting to suffer now that I have to go at speed. I also heard worship, didn't I? I'm going to put that over here, even though it's not necessarily the same thing, but What's that? Honesty. I like honesty. Generosity. Humility. Uh-huh. Community. Festival of Giving. Listen to you. You get the gold star, Richard. I like integrity. All right, now, children, I don't have time or room for all of your responses. We do have to move on. But I'll get this out of the way because you want to still see all that's going on there, and I'll try to spin it and swivel it. That's really interesting. We've got a lot of things there. What do you see that's not there? Trust and faith aren't there, but those are good things. I'd definitely put those up. Oh, I'm thinking more like it's interesting to me what we haven't said as much as what we have said. In other words, what do we think it's not? Fighting, definitely not that. Fear, not that. Bondage, you say? Worry, did I hear someone say? This ear isn't working that well these days. Do you know what? Do you know what is interesting to me on this whiteboard is that one thing that does not appear is there's no mention of following rules or laws. It's interesting how we recognize that. There's obedience. Funny thing, though, if you listen to my last message, you'll know that obedience in the New Testament looks different than following laws and following rules, yeah? You're very good students. Well done. I was about to say well done 4B, but that's at school. You can be 4B today if you want. Look, it's very clear that we know that service to God isn't about following rules and it's not about following laws, is it? And the New Testament is clear about that as well. The New Testament is clear that truly serving God doesn't look like that. In fact, when the issue of the law actually does come up, here's the context in which it comes up. Gentiles are starting to believe in Jesus and starting to enter the fellowship, a predominantly Jewish church. Gentiles start to enter, and really the first conflict we know about and read about in the church is, what do we do with these Gentiles? Do they need to become circumcised? Yikes. Do they need to become circumcised and follow the law? That's the first big question. It seems silly to ask, but back then, that was a huge issue. And so that's the question. Do they need to follow the law? Well, Peter has a lot to say about this because he sort of came a long way in this regard himself. Here's what he says. Here's his response. Now then, this is from the book of Acts when they're discussing this matter. He says, now then, why do you try to test God by putting on the neck of the Gentiles a yoke that neither we nor our ancestors have been able to bear? What an interesting thing to say. Yeah? Why are you testing God by forcing these Gentiles to live according to the law when we ourselves and our ancestors were not able to do it? And as a contrast, interestingly, we can look at Jesus' own words in Matthew chapter 11. He says this, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." Jesus promises something better than a heavy burden of legalism and following rules and laws. Jesus gives us a better kind of service. But still, what does it look like? Well, what do we think? There's a lot of things up there. Interestingly, acts of kindness sticks out to me. Sacrifice sticks out to me. Friendship, love. generosity. Festival of Giving. Thanks, Richard. That one sticks out to me as well. That all that sticks out to me, doesn't it? And it, maybe perhaps it sticks out to you as well. Maybe it sticks out to me because that's what I want to talk about. But that's but it stands. It jumps off the board at me. And I think the New Testament really backs that right up. We get passages like this, Matthew chapter 25. Then the righteous will answer him, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see a stranger and invite, when did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and go to visit you? The king will reply, truly, I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me. And we can also look at this letter from James chapter 1. It says this, religion that God our Father accepts as pure and faultless is this, to look after orphans and widows. I love this verse. To look after orphans and widows in their distress, and to keep oneself from being polluted by the world. And finally, we'll look at something from Paul in Galatians 5. He says this, and I love this one. You, my brothers and sisters, were called to be free. Free from the law, yeah? And that's what this whole book of Galatians is about, by the way. The whole book of Galatians is about freedom from the law, not having to follow its rules and regulations to the letter anymore. So Paul says this, you, my brothers and sisters, were called to be free. Do not use your freedom to indulge the flesh. Rather, serve one another humbly in love. Humility was up there, right? I don't think I put it. Somebody said humility. I didn't get it up on the board, but somebody did shout that out. Serve one another humbly in love. Do you know that love is the number one commandment that we read about in the New Testament? It comes up all the time. You can almost get bored of it because it's so frequent. Paul, in all of his letters, just constantly harps on it. Love, 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 love. Peter does. Peter does. James does. All of the New Testament letter writers and people who write epistles, yeah? The New Testament writers who wrote epistles, they all bang on about this. Love, love, love. And we're not talking, again, I mentioned this the last time I spoke, we are not talking about warm feelings. Love is not warm feelings. This love that we often use the word, and this the word that's used, the Greek word is agape, and we know that word, we've heard that word. It's not feelings at all, it's action. It's love and action. It's the way you treat other people and what you do for them, how you show your love. So for us, I'm going to suggest that serving God actually looks like serving others. And maybe that's the hardest part, actually, because all of a sudden, it's not about us. All right? Serving God, and I want you to hear this, serving God is not about what we can get. It's not about what rewards or benefits we receive from God. It's about what we give, you know, what we give to those around us. That's what this life is about. So, a friend of mine, look, I'm just going to level with you. My psychologist, right, because I'm a mess in the head, you know, who isn't, yeah? So, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, whatever, I saw this psychologist for several sessions. He's very wise, very godly man. And what he said to me in one of our sessions, I'll never forget this. He said to me, Adam, the purpose of life is not to be happy. The purpose of life is not to be happy. The purpose of life is to engage with the world. Now, that was hard to hear. It really was. Because I like being happy. Who doesn't? It was hard to hear, but it's true. Serving ourselves, you know, seeking our own happiness, it's not fulfilling. And I mean, don't misunderstand me, by the way. I'm not saying the Christian life is one where we never get to be happy. That's not what I mean. But if we make happiness the target of our lives, when we're focusing on the wrong target, because that target always moves. Happiness is fleeting. Because the thing that made you happy yesterday often doesn't make you happy today. And the thing that made you happy today will often run out. So that tomorrow, you're back to being unhappy. If that's your target, you're always going to miss. Eventually, you're going to miss. It's not a good hit rate. So I'm suggesting that the focus of our life is, like my friend said, it's about engaging with the world, engaging with the people around us. That's a life of fulfillment. I really do think Dylan, he was right. Yeah? Got to serve somebody. And it brings us back to the Joshua question. Whom will we serve? Will we, you know, serve ourselves? Will we look after our own needs? Will we look after our own happiness? Or will we serve the Lord? And will we serve the Lord by serving others? By serving those around us? By serving the family of believers, brothers and sisters? By serving our neighbors outside that family? Will we serve God in that way? And what will it require? Well, generosity. That's what it's going to require of us. It's going to require generosity with our money. It's going to require generosity with our resources, generosity with our time. And the good news is, guys, I think we're already pretty good at that, really. Don't hear me as like, I'm not bringing the hammer down on you, right? I think we have a commitment in this church to pursue service in this way. I want you to take this as more as an encouragement, not as like, do this, you know, because that's not what I'm about. But we all do need to understand and continually remember, because it's easy to lose this, isn't it? We need to remember that generosity will be required of us because our master is generous. Right? Our God is generous. He has been generous to us. And it's just not right for us to turn around and be ungenerous to others. So look, this morning, I told Di I was going to set up like a sheep and a goats kind of situation here, you know, left and right, like those who want to serve the Lord and those who don't. No, but I'm not going to do that, yeah? I'm not going to set up one of those situations, although it would be funny. I'm not going to do that. Because the truth is, guys, look, not only is our God a generous God, He's a merciful God, yeah? He understands our failings. He understands we don't always get this right. He comes alongside us to enable us to do this kind of service better, right? To make us more generous and to help us to become more loving to those around us. Because we can't do it without Him. We can't do it without His love, without His generosity operating through us. It's a real symbiotic type relationship. So look, this morning, where are you at? I don't think there would be too many people in the room who would say, I don't want to serve the Lord, right? Nobody's going to say that. But maybe this morning you want an increase in your generosity. Maybe you want an increase in your generosity and like an increase in your provisions so that you can generously bless others with them. Or maybe you want an increase in your perception to be able to see the needs around you, because they're easy to ignore. Maybe that's what you need this morning. Maybe, and this one's hard, but maybe you feel like you have failed in this way, in serving God, and you need to experience God's mercy today. That's there for you, because who hasn't failed, right? Who hasn't? I think about Peter. Yeah, I love Peter. When, you know, this isn't a nice scene, but when Jesus is about to be tried and crucified, and they ask Peter, like, oh, yeah, you're a follower of Jesus, right? No way. Oh, not me. I don't even know Jesus. I think about him Jesus doesn't reject him at all. He failed. Jesus restores him, brings him back. We all fail. Everybody gets this wrong. But if that's your feeling today, if you're feeling like that, I ask you, please come forward to ask for God's mercy. Now, let me say this. You already have it. You have it. It's already there. But perhaps you need to be alerted to it. Perhaps you need to come to recognize it. Perhaps you need to experience it in a tangible way this morning. So I'd invite you to come forward today.